Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, bringing you Christmas programs from radio's past. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Coming up in this hour, variety from the Radio Hall of Fame. MC'd by singer Bing Crosby, we also hear actor and director Orson Welles in this NBC Blue Network broadcast, first heard on Christmas Eve, 1944.
Philco Corporation, world's largest radio manufacturer, presents your Radio Hall of Fame. From the beautiful Earl Carroll Theater Restaurant in Hollywood, today and every Sunday for one full hour, the stars made great by your recognition of their achievements are brought to you by Philco Corporation. Makers today of radar and electronic equipment to help win the war, makers tomorrow of products for good living in a world at peace. The name of our master of ceremonies today is reason enough for him being in your Radio Hall of Fame. He's a talented, lovable guy. The Bob Hope of song, who can currently be seen in the Paramount picture, Here Come the Waves. Bing Crosby.
Jingle bells, jingle all the way. What fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Jingle bells, jingle all the way. What fun to ride and sing in a one-horse open sleigh. Dashing through the snow in a one-horse open sleigh. O'er the fields we go, laughing and scratching all the way. Bells and bobtails ring, making spirits bright. What fun it is to ride and sing a sleighing song tonight. Jingle bells, jingle all the way. What fun it is to ride in a one-horse open. Oh, we have a lot of fun. Jingle bells, jingle all the way. What fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, Jimmy Wallington, for the wonderful, eloquent introduction you gave me. You know, I was afraid for a moment that you weren't going to leave me enough adjectives to adequately introduce, or if you'd rather I didn't split an infinitive, to introduce adequately the one and only Orson Welles and that outstanding quartet, King's Men. And we have Joe DeRita, Darlene Garner, and Jeannie Durrell, and of course, Paul Whiteman, all of whom will entertain you today on our Day Before Christmas show. You know, I think Christmas is a day for prayer and joy. I think that's what the people who first celebrated Christmas meant it to be. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's the way I feel. I know that many of you have husbands and sons and brothers and others who are dear to you overseas, and that you're worried about them. But I don't think those men want you to worry about them on Christmas Day. I think they'd want you to celebrate Christmas in the same spirit as if they were with you or as near to it as you can, and to write about it to them later so that they can share the joy you've had. I never knew a soldier yet who wanted his folks back home to worry about him. And I'm sure Christmas Day is no exception. That's how I feel about Christmas, and I'm sure the Philco people feel the same way.
Oh, Bing, boy.
Yes, well, Paul Whiteman. Well, Pops, you old son of a gun, how you been?
Oh, great, Bing. Gee, when I look at you, it brings back memories of the time when we first started out in this big world of music.
Tell me, Paul, way back there in the days of the Rhythm Boys, how did you think I rated as a singer?
Oh, great. I thought you were the Dick Hames of your generation.
Here now. Steady, Mount Baldy, steady.
Let me see, I wonder how long ago it was when you made your first appearance in my band. Now, let me see. 1915, I was a Frisco...
The enemy might be listening.
The enemy?
Frankie has a radio, you know. But, Paul, it's really, really a great kick getting together with you after all these years.
How do you think I look?
Oh, wonderful. You're so round, so firm, so loosely packed.
Well, Harry Lillis, I'm mighty proud of you. You've certainly done terrific.
Oh, I've stolen a few bucks and a few bows and a few things around.
Well, you've managed to keep the wolf away from the door.
Oh, Hope calls occasionally.
Gee, Bing, all kidding aside, don't you think Bob Hope is great in the movies?
Great? Well, Paul, I'd hate to be the source of any unkind comment about Hose Nose, but... if you wouldn't, you won't blab it around, of course, will you?
No.
I have some news for you. That boy is slipping. He's a tired old man. Hi, Joe.
Well, hello, Bing. Hello.
Joe, here we are back from France only a couple of months, and yet to me, those days in Paris, they seem almost forgotten.
Yeah, but those nights stick in my mind.
Ah.
Oh, boy, oh, boy. And yet the days, I don't know. You know what I heard, Bing?
What?
I heard that Bob Hope was in Paris right before us.
Right before us?
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you want to call 1917 right before us. You know, Nozzle Schnozzle was the pinup boy of World War I, I think.
Well, Bing, I don't care what you say. They tell me that Mr. Hope was the hero of a great battle in Paris.
That's the truth.
Yeah?
Yes. Bob captured the first postcard, I think. Joe, what have you been doing?
Oh, I'm back in my old business.
But what was that? I forgot.
The butcher business.
The butcher business.
Yes, the butcher business.
What do you hustle, gristle?
Huh? Don't be silly. I specialize in one thing.
Ah, you got to specialize.
Yes, rabbit sausage.
Rabbit sausage. What's rabbit sausage, if you don't mind?
Well, in pork sausage, you put pork.
Yeah.
And in veal sausage, you put veal.
Yes.
So I make rabbit sausage, so naturally I put rabbit in my sausage.
Ah.
And my rabbit sausage is very good if I do say so myself. And I do say so. It's very good. I tell you right now.
You know, come to think of it, I think I've heard of your rabbit sausage.
Oh, you must have heard of it. It's the talk of the town.
You know what the current scuttle is about your rabbit sausage, don't
No,
you?
No, what?
They say you put horse meat in your rabbit sausage.
You heard that I put horse meat in my rabbit? Yep. It's a lie. It's an unfair statement, anybody to deliberately say that I put horse meat in my rabbit sausage. It's just Wall Street trying to run me out of business. That's what it is. The moneyed men trying to crush the little fella. Saying I put horse meat in. Who's the stool pigeon? Huh?
So you do, huh? You do put horse meat in your rabbit sausage.
Well, a little.
What do you mean a little?
Well, it's 50-50.
What do you mean 50-50?
One rabbit and one horse.
Oh, that's
you see.
All right. That's one of the jokes we stole.
Yeah. Well, naturally, Bing, I use the large rabbits and the smaller horses.
You'll stay away from my stable, won't you?
I will.
Now, Joe, tell me, don't you miss La Belle France at all?
Hmm? Oh, boy, yes. And especially those French girls. Ooh, la, la. You know, Bing, I'd like to go back, but I can't.
You can't? Why not?
My wife won't release me for active duty. she's giving me trouble again.
What's the matter?
Oh, fighting all the time.
Yeah, what's her beef?
Arguments. All. I stay away from home 3 or 4 weeks. I come home. She wants to know where I've been.
Oh. She's being
very... narrow-minded.
She's picky.
Oh,
she's
she
picky.
Makes me... She
yes.
makes me so mad, I'm telling you. One of these, I'm going to clip her. I'll clip the old bag
no,
if it's the last
no.
thing I do.
No, no, you can't do.
I'll punch her right
no,
in her
no,
broken
please.
Nose.
No, but you'll be careful. You're
oh,
bitter.
I hate that woman. She makes me so mad, it brings the tomboy out of me. Well, I hope my scoutmaster don't hear about what I'm going to do.
Don't let him know.
He won't take me to camp next summer. I mean...
You know, I think your wife is right.
Right?
Your place is at home with her.
I wouldn't mind staying home, Bing, but she's so ugly.
She is, huh?
And the makeup she uses.
Makeup?
She,
what's the matter with the makeup?
She must use gunpowder in her makeup.
Well,
she must.
Why do you say that?
Her face is all shot to pieces. Did you get a good look at it? Oh, she...
I wouldn't say that, really.
Oh, you wouldn't
no,
say that?
No, I wouldn't.
Well, I'm saying that. And don't forget, Bing, other women have teeth. That's an
teeth.
Item, too.
Oh, now, just a minute. Let's be fair.
Why?
Your wife has teeth, too.
That's just what she's got. Teeth, too. Two lousy molars. But you know what I'm going to do?
What, Joe?
I'm going down to my draft board the first thing in the morning
That's
and
good.
Make them change my classification from 66G.
That's your current classification?
That's 66? My classification.
Well, whatever does that mean?
Well, in case of a woman power shortage, I'm the first one to knit socks. Well,
that's good. I'm glad I may join you. Thank you. Thanks, Joe. Now I'd like you to meet the distaff side of our breakaway follies.
Two charming, lovely, and talented young ladies who really made a big hit with the G.I.s. They were a solid bop, these babes. Darlene Garner and Jeannie Durrell. Gal?
Hi, Bing.
Hello, Darlene.
Hello, Bing.
Hello, Jean. Nothing small about me, is there, fellas? I take two Francis Langtons around when I go over there.
Bing, I want to thank you for taking me to that nightclub in Paris.
Oh, I was glad to do it. It's nothing at all, really.
But, Bing, there's one thing I didn't understand.
What's that?
When the bill came, why did you argue so much with the waiter about the difference between the American exchange on currency and the French exchange?
Darlene, I didn't want to see you get cheated, dear.
Oh.
You catch on?
Oh,
good.
Yeah.
Take five. Jean, how have you been occupying your time since you got home?
Well, Bing, I've been seeing movies with all my favorite stars.
Have you?
Fred McMurray.
Oh, something could be said for him, all right.
And Cary Grant.
Something could be said for him.
Bob Hope.
That couldn't be said. Kids, why don't we wind up this reunion with a song, a little song we used to louse up overseas. The boys used to like it. It's written by Johnny Mercer and Harold Arlen. It's called Accentuate the Positive. You lead off.
Yes.
We may get lost somewhere. Just go as far as you can go. If you get stuck, send up a flare somewhere.
Right.
You ready? Go ahead.
You gotta accentuate the positive.
Elim, don't giggle in the negative.
Latch on, oh boy, to the affirmative. Don't mess with Mr. In Between. You gotta spread joy.
Watch it. Do the negative.
Keep gloom. Down to the minimum. Have faith,
oh boy.
Or pandemonium liable to walk upon the scene. To illustrate.
Well, demonstrate.
My last remark.
Go ahead.
Jonah in the whale, Noah in the ark. What did they do?
That's mellow.
Just when everything looked so dark.
Solo.
Man, I said you gotta.
I don't think we better get that as far as we can. Don't go away. Stay up, you'll get a draw. I think we better not sing any more of that. I'll get a very sharp note from Johnny Mercer. That's his favorite song. We're very proud of Miss Durrell because of the job she's done in this war. She's entertained in every theater of war where our boys are engaged in the last 4 years. She's sung and entertained in China, Burma, India, New Zealand, Australia, the South Pacific, Italy, Africa, Egypt, Iraq, Persia, Sicily, England, France, Italy. Everywhere where our boys are fighting, this young lady has entertained in the last 4 years. I think you ought to give her a big hand. You know, in introducing candidates for your Radio Hall of Fame, it's customary to indulge in hyperbole and to stretch the English language in an effort to find new expressions which will do justice to their personal magnificence and their rare talent. However, in the case of this next member, he's not a candidate because he was installed earlier this year, I'm not going to do it. After all, when you've said that he's probably the most versatile person in show business, a remarkable actor, director, producer, and writer, what can you say that just isn't so much parsley, really? I don't know, except that maybe to add that right now, recordings of him reading the entire Bible are being made and will eventually be played on many stations throughout the country. It'll be well worth listening to because he's good. I don't know what else I can say about him, so I won't. Orson Welles, that's... Welcome to the Hall of Fame, Orson, and happy Yuletide.
Thanks, Bing, and Merry Christmas to you, too. And
Orson,
I do mean you.
Thank
I
you
do,
so yeah. much. Why don't you come up to our shack for Christmas Eve, Orson? Just the family will be home.
No, thanks, Bing. It'll be too crowded.
Well, we've got a jolly program arranged, really. We're having a preview of the new picture I just made with L'Amour and Hope. It's called The Road to Utopia.
Do you mean to say that you allow your children to see Bob Hope in a movie?
Well, I'm hoping it'll have the same effect on them as A Crime Doesn't Pay Short, maybe.
Tell me, what is this road to utopia?
Oh, it's two guys and a gal in the frozen north.
Too much plot. Thank you for laughing.
I like it. Yes, I enjoy it. In the picture, Hope and I are two grizzled old prospectors.
If L'Amour is in the picture, I know what Hope is prospecting for.
And the kid hasn't got the pan for it either.
What? What I can't understand is how come you got Dorothy Lamour way up in the north where she'll have to wear big fur coats?
Oh, no. Dorothy walks around in a sarong.
Please, Crosby, you are straining my credulity. A sarong in the frozen north?
But certainement. When Skeeno sees her, he generates enough heat to warm a 12-room apartment.
Some lover, that boy.
Oh,
hopes, some
wonderful
lover. You know, most fellas, before they start getting romantic, have to wait till the moon is high.
What about Bob?
He has to wait till a girl is high.
You're so right. Really,
yes,
but
I am.
Bobsy is an impetuous lover. You know, in one scene, Orson, he squeezed Dorothy Lamour so hard, he knocked 3 of her vertebrae out of place.
Well, that must have been awful for Dot.
Oh, no, I got her into a clinch, snapped them right back in there.
Using the Shartz medical method.
I give her half an
hour. Sure. Well, how do you explain that? Bob Hope.
Well, Orson, Bob has led a very sheltered youth.
Oh, yes.
You know, he was 36 years old before he was told about the birds and the bees.
Well, that explains it.
What's this?
Well, I just saw him on the corner of Hollywood and Vine flapping his arms and saying, I want honey, I want honey. But no matter what you say about him, Bingle, you have to admit that Bob Hope is a great guy.
Yes, and he's a
very handsome.
Yes, he's a great actor, too.
Yes, and he's talented.
And very generous, too. Yes, sir. We may as well get in all our lies before the new year. Actually, the spirit of friendship and forgiveness should prevail. And Orson, there's something that really... I've seen the Christmas mood, and I heard you read it once, something from the Bible. I wonder if you'd read it for us now. I'm referring to the story of the Nativity as told by St. Luke in the Bible, according to St. James.
Came to pass in those days that there went out a decree from Caesar Augustus that all the world should be taxed. And all went to be taxed, every one into his own city. And Joseph also went up from Galilee, out of the city of Nazareth into Judea, unto the city of David, which is called Bethlehem, to be taxed with Mary, his espoused wife, being great with child. And so it was that while they were there, the days were accomplished that she should be delivered. And she brought forth her firstborn son and wrapped him in swaddling clothes and laid him in a manger because there was no room for them in the inn. And there were in the same country shepherds abiding in the field, keeping watch over their flock by night. And lo, the angel of the Lord came upon them, and the glory of the Lord shone round about them, and they were sore afraid. And the angel said unto them, Fear not, for behold, I bring you good tidings of great joy, which shall be to all people. For unto you is born this day in the city of David a Savior, which is Christ the Lord. And this shall be a sign unto you, you shall find the babe wrapped in swaddling clothes, lying in a manger. And suddenly there was with the angel a multitude of the heavenly host praising God and saying, Glory to God in the highest, and on earth, peace, goodwill toward men.
Orson, that was a beautiful reading of one of the most beautiful stories ever told. Tonight and tomorrow in churches throughout the world we call civilized, there'll be prayer and song. Some churches will be kind of improvised, with no walls and with their only arch, the sky. Some of those altars will be improvised. Never can tell what a chaplain might have to use as an altar. A chaplain who is near to the front lines of battle. And there, our fighting men, to whom death is no stranger, will sing of him who is eternal life. And one of the songs that will be sung in some of those churches over there is the same that we sing in ours over here. Adeste Fidelis. The Portuguese hymn seems to breathe the spirit of Christmas. And now we'd like to sing it here for you.
Adeste Fidelis, Regem Angelorum, Venite adoremus, Venite adoremus, Venite adoremus.
Today, on the eve of Christmas, Philco joins with millions of Americans in a greeting to our loved ones overseas. This year again, we look forward with hope to the day of victory and pray that men may learn through their trials and sacrifices to live together in peace and goodwill. To our tasks here at home, we pledge all our devotion that we may do our part to make you strong and victorious. To our fighting men and women, wherever they may be on this Christmas Eve, Philco sends a grateful greeting and salute. You are dialed into your Radio Hall of Fame, which this week pays homage to those superlative artists in the field of entertainment that we have with us here today. Orson Welles, the King's Men, Paul Whiteman, and your master of ceremonies, Bing Crosby, who, like one of his own horses, is champing at the bit.
A few years ago, Ken Darby wrote a musical setting for that merry old childhood classic which glorified the Ranger for Tarandus, known to you and also to me as that common four-legged hat-rack, the reindeer. The classic, of course, is The Night Before Christmas, and it received such a royal welcome, it became kind of a regular feature offered at Christmas time by the King's Men. Out of their flowing bowl of song, the King's Men pour The Night Before Christmas with Sally Sweetland doing the lullaby. Gentlemen?
Stockings were hung by the chimney with care, in hopes that St. Nicholas soon would be there. The children were nestled all snug in their wee little bed, while visions of sugar plums dance in their wee little heads.
Mama in her kerchief and I in my cap had just settled down
for a
on Comet, on Cupid, on Donner and Blitzen. To the top of the porch, to the top of the wall, dash away, dash away, dash away, dash away all. So up to the housetops, the coursers, they flew with a sleigh full of toys, and St. Nicholas too. And then in a twinkling I heard on the roof all the clattering noise of each galloping hoof. All bundled in fur from his head to his foot, old Santa was covered with ashes and soot. I drew in my head and was turning around, when down the chimney he came with a bow.
Yeah.
how they twinkle. His dimples, how merry. His cheeks were like roses. His nose like a cherry. His droll little mouth was drawn up like a bow.
The beard on his chin was as white as the snow. The stump of a little old pipe he held tight in his teeth. And the smoke went around and around and around his head like a wreath. He was so chubby and plump, a right jolly old elf. And I laughed and I laughed and I laughed when I saw him in spite of myself. He had a broad face, ho, 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 and a little round belly, ho, 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 that shook when he laughed, ho, 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 like a bowl full of jelly. Ho, ho, he gave me a wink of his eye and a twist of his head. A chuckle and a smile I knew all the while I had nothing to dread. He spoke not a word, but went straight to his work and filled all the stockings, then turned with a jerk. Then laying a finger aside of his nose and giving a nod up the chimney he rose. He sprang to his sleigh, to his team, gave a whistle, and away they all flew like the down of a thistle. But I heard him exclaim, and he drove out of sight.
Merry Christmas and good night.
Was the night after Christmas, and all through the hall, not a creature is stirring, not even a mouse. The presents are scattered and broken, I fear, and Saint Nicholas won't come again for a year. Children are nestled all snug in their wee little beds, while memories of sugar plums dance in their wee little heads.
Mama in her kerchief and I in my cap are settled at last for a long winter's
clever arrangement, Ken.
Oh, Bing.
Yeah, what is it, Uncle Wells?
Well, I just got this through the grapevine. Bob Hope sent you a very novel Christmas present.
Just the idea of him sending me anything is novel enough. What did you hear that he sent me?
A pair of Bobby socks.
That's a gross lie. An untruth, a fabrication.
So are you saying? You can pronounce
yes,
it, too.
Yes, I can.
What did Bob send you?
Well, he sent me Frankie Sinatra. Very practical gift, too. You can't get the regular pipe cleaners anymore. You've got... But I'm sorry, I didn't mean to say talk like that about Frankie, because actually the kid has put on a lot of weight. He even has a pot tummy now.
No, that isn't a pot tummy, Bing.
No.
Frankie was having tea the other day, and he swallowed the bag.
Oh.
But tell me, what are you going to send Bob Hope for Christmas?
Oh, I don't know. Don't you have any suggestions, Orson? I I mean something that could be said over the air, of course.
Yeah. Well, I understand Bob is a little short of gas. So? Yes.
What?
I thought you might send him a siphon.
Siphon? Mm. Have you noticed that boy's nose?
Really?
Come up close on that horn of his sometime. Frighten you to death. Now we're on the subject of gifts, Orson. What have you got stashed away for us?
Well, I brought you a story by Oscar Wilde, The Happy Prince.
Well, mighty generous you are. Will you unwrap it?
Will you lend a hand in the telling of the story?
Do my best, Orson.
Good. High above the city, on a tall column, stood the statue of the Happy Prince. He was gilded all over with thin leaves of fine gold. For eyes, he had two bright sapphires and a large ruby glowed on his sword hilt. He was very much admired indeed. One night there flew over the city a little swallow on his way south to the pyramids in Egypt. He stopped when he saw the statue on the tall column.
I will put up here for the night. It is a fine position with plenty of fresh air. I have a golden bedroom.
Just as the swallow prepared to go to sleep, a large drop of water fell on him.
What a curious thing. There's not a single cloud in the sky, and yet it's raining. The climate here in the north is really dreadful.
Then another drop fell.
What is the use of a statue if it cannot keep the rain off? I must look for a good chimney pot.
But before he'd opened his wings, a third drop fell, and he looked up and saw... what did he see? The eyes of the Happy Prince were filled with tears, and tears were running down his golden cheeks.
Who are you?
I am the Happy Prince.
Why are you weeping, then?
When I was alive and had a human heart, I didn't know what tears were. My courtiers called me the Happy Prince, and happy indeed I was, if pleasure be happiness. Now that I am dead, I am up here so high, I can see all the ugliness and all the misery of my city. And though my heart is made of lead, yet I cannot choose but weep.
What? Is he not solid gold?
The swallow said this to himself. He was too polite to make any personal remarks out loud.
Far away in a little street, there is a poor house. One of the windows is open, and through it I can see a woman seated at a table. Her face is thin and worn, and she has coarse red hands, all pricked by the needle, for she is a seamstress. She is embroidering passion flowers on a satin gown for the loveliest of the Queen's maids of honor to wear at the next court ball. In a bed in the corner of the room, her little boy is lying ill. He has a fever, and he's asking for oranges. His mother has nothing to give him but river water, so he's crying. Swallow? Little Swallow, will you not bring her the ruby out of my sword hilt? My feet are fastened to this pedestal, and I cannot move.
I am waited for in Egypt. My friends are flying up and down the Nile and talking to the large lotus flowers.
Swallow, little Swallow, will you not stay with me for one night and be my messenger? The boy is so thirsty and the mother is so sad.
It is very cold here, but I will stay with you for one night and be your messenger.
Thank you, little Swallow.
So the Swallow picked out the great ruby from the prince's sword and flew away with it in his beak over the roofs of the town. He passed by the palace and heard the sound of dancing. A beautiful girl came out on the balcony with her lover.
How wonderful the stars are, and how wonderful is the power of love.
I hope my dress will be ready in time for the state ball. I've ordered passion flowers to be embroidered on it, but the seamstresses are so lazy.
He passed over the river and saw the lanterns hanging to the masts of the ship. At last he came to the poorhouse and looked in. The boy was tossing feverishly on his bed, and the mother had fallen asleep. She was so tired. In he hopped and laid the great ruby on the table beside the woman's thimble. Then the swallow flew back to the Happy Prince and told him what he had done.
It is curious, but I feel quite warm now, although it is so cold.
That's because you've done a good action.
And the little swallow began to think, and then he fell asleep. Thinking always made him sleepy. When day broke, he flew down to the river and had a bath.
Tonight I go to Egypt.
The swallow was in high spirits at the prospect. When the moon rose, he flew back to the Happy Prince.
Have you any commissions for Egypt? I am just starting.
Swallow, will you not stay with me one night longer?
I am waited for in Egypt. Tomorrow my friends will fly up to the second cataract. The river horse couches there among the bulrushes. And on a great granite throne sits the god Mammon.
Swallow, swallow, little swallow, far away across the city, I see a young man in a garret. He's leaning over a desk covered with papers. He's trying to finish a play for the director of the theater. It's too cold to write anymore. There's no fire in the grate, and hunger has made him faint.
I will wait with you one night longer. Shall I take him another ruby?
Oh, alas, I have no ruby now. My eyes are all that I have left. They're made of rare sapphires, which were brought out of India 1,000 years ago. Pluck out one of them and take it to him. He'll sell it to the jeweler and buy firewood and he'll finish his play.
Dear Prince, I cannot do that.
Swallow. Swallow, little swallow, do as I command you.
So the swallow plucked out the prince's eye and flew away to the student's garret. It was easy enough to get in, as there was a hole in the roof. Through this he darted and came into the room. The young man had his head buried in his hands, so he didn't hear the flutter of the bird's wings. And when he looked up, he found the beautiful sapphire.
I'm beginning to be appreciated. This is from some great admirer. Now I can finish my play.
The next night, the swallow flew back to the happy prince.
I'm come to bid you goodbye.
Swallow, swallow, little swallow, will you not stay with me one night longer?
It is winter, and the chill snow will soon be here. In Egypt, the sun is warm on the green palm trees, and the crocodiles lie in the mud and look lazily about them. My companions are building a nest in the temple of Baalbek. Dear prince, I must leave you, but next spring, I will bring you back 2 beautiful jewels in place of those you've given away. The ruby shall be redder than a red rose, and the sapphire shall be as blue as the great sea.
In the square below, there stands a little match girl. She's let her matches fall in the gutter, and they're all spoiled. Her father will beat her. She doesn't bring home some money, and she's crying. She has no shoes or stockings, and her little head is bare. Pluck out my other eye and give it to her. Her father will not beat her.
I will stay with you one night longer, but I cannot pluck out your eye. You would be quite blind.
Swallow, swallow, little swallow, do as I command you.
So he plucked out the prince's other eye, darted down with it. He swooped past the match girl and slipped the jewel into the palm of her hand. Then the swallow came back to the prince.
You are blind now, so I will stay with you always.
No, little swallow, you must go away to Egypt.
I will stay with you always.
And he slept at the prince's feet. All the next day he sat on the prince's shoulder and told him stories of what he had seen in strange lands. He told him of the red ibises who stand in long rows on the banks of the Nile and catch goldfish in their beaks, of the Sphinx, who is as old as the world itself and lives in the desert and knows everything, of the king of the mountains of the moon, who worships a large crystal, of the great green snake that sleeps in a palm tree and has 20 priests to feed it with honey cakes, and of the pygmies who sail over a big lake on large, flat leaves, and are always at war with the butterflies.
Dear little swallow, you tell me of marvelous things. But more marvelous than anything is the suffering of men and women. There is no mystery so great as misery. Fly over my city, little swallow, and tell me what you see there.
So the swallow flew over the great city and saw the rich making merry in their beautiful houses, while the beggars were sitting at the gates. He flew into dark lanes and saw the white faces of starving children looking out listlessly at the black streets. Then he flew back and told the prince what he had seen.
I am covered with fine gold. You must take it off, leaf by leaf, and give it to the poor.
Leaf after leaf of the fine gold the swallow picked off, until the happy prince looked quite dull and gray. Leaf after leaf of the fine gold he brought to the poor, and the children's faces grew rosier, and they laughed and played in the street. Then the snow came, and after the snow came the frost. The streets looked as if they were made of silver. They were so bright and glistening. Long icicles like crystal daggers hung down from the eaves of the houses. Everybody went about in furs, and the little boys wore scarlet caps and skated on the ice. The poor little swallow grew colder and colder, but he would not leave the prince. He loved him too well. He picked up crumbs outside the baker's door when the baker wasn't looking and tried to keep himself warm by flapping his wings. But at last, he knew that he was going to die. He had just enough strength to fly up to the prince's shoulder once more.
Goodbye, dear prince. Will you let me kiss your hand?
I am glad that you are going to Egypt at last, little swallow. You have stayed too long here.
It is not Egypt that I am going. I'm going to the house of death. Death is the brother of sleep, is he not?
And he kissed the happy prince on the lips and fell down dead at his feet. At that moment, a curious crack sounded inside the statue, as if something had broken. The fact is that the leaden heart had snapped right in two. Certainly was a dreadfully hard frost. Early the next morning, the mayor was walking in the square below in the company of the town councilors. As they passed the column, he looked up at the statue.
Dear me, how shabby the happy prince looks. And here is actually a dead bird at his feet. We must really issue a proclamation that birds are not to be allowed to die here.
And the town clerk made a note of the suggestion. So they pulled down the statue of the happy prince. And they melted the statue in a furnace. And the mayor held a meeting of the corporation to decide what was to be done with the metal.
We must have another statue, of course. And it shall be a statue of myself.
Of myself.
Of myself.
Of myself.
Said each of the town councilors, and they quarreled. When I last heard of them, they were quarreling still.
What a strange thing.
Said the overseer of the workmen at the foundry.
This broken lead heart will not melt in the furnace. We must throw it away.
So they threw it on a dust heap, where the dead swallow was also lying. Bring me the two most precious things in the city, said God to one of his angels. And the angel brought in the leaden heart and the dead bird. You have rightly chosen, said God. For in my garden of paradise, this little bird shall sing forevermore. And in my city of gold, the happy prince shall praise me.
Orson, you were grand. Leave your name and address with the girl at the desk. I must use you in my next season's series of serious plays. I have some things for you in mind.
Tell me, Curly. Where do you plan to stage these tragedies? In the paddock at Santa Anita?
Oh, it could be. No. How did you think I did as the happy prince?
I liked you in it. No, seriously. I really did. Thank you very much for doing it.
Thank you, Orson.
Yes. Save the day.
Save the day?
Yes.
You think I was an adequate happy prince?
You were more than adequate.
I thought I was more or less of a sad sack myself. But,
No, I guess it's me, isn't it, in through here?
Right in through here, you lay something in here.
No, I wanted to pay a little tribute to you, Bing.
Me?
Yeah, but I'll skip it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'll see you
after. There's a song I'd like to hear you sing.
Find me a
song. I'm sure our listeners would, too. It was originally introduced in a picture called Holiday Inn. And, you are ahead of me, ladies and gentlemen. It won the Academy Award. This is almost as good as The Happy Prince and has the best song written for a motion picture in 1941. I just happen to have my notes here. And your recording of it has sold 2 million copies of it. Am I right there in my statistics? Mm-hmm. It's called...
I'm Dreaming of a White Christmas.
Right.
But don't ask me to sing that.
Oh, why not?
Well, White Christmas has been done so much lately, every time you turn on your radio, you got to sweep the snow out of your living room.
No, nevertheless, Bingo, White Christmas has become something of a classic. And besides, nobody sings it quite like you.
Oh,
isn't that
just
right?
Say that.
So,
oh, what a villain.
Yeah. Mind you, I said quite.
Quite.
Yes.
You left an opening.
And, so how about singing it?
Well,
for
after
us?
That big build-up, Orson, what else can I do but submit gracefully? Especially since, by a curious coincidence, the king's men are at the microphone, Paul Whiteman has his baton raised, and the musicians are already swinging into the opening strains of...
Just like the ones I used to know, where the treetops glisten and children listen to hear sleigh bells in the snow. of a white Christmas. With every Christmas card I write, may your day be merry and bright, and may all your Christmases be
May the spirit of Christmas be with us, and not only on Christmas. We mean the spirit of kindliness and gentleness that seems to be with us on Christmas Day. The spirit that makes us say Merry Christmas to a stranger, but makes us friendlier. The spirit of giving to others. The spirit of selflessness. The spirit of love thy neighbor as thyself. The spirit of him whose birth we celebrate today. Some of which seems to enter into us on Christmas. We don't mean to preach a sermon, but we do think that if something of that spirit were with us 365 days of the year instead of just one day, and if it weren't just with us but with nations, all nations, then maybe someday, unstained by the red blood of war, there'd be a long succession of white Christmases, a lifetime, many lifetimes of white Christmases.
Now, thank you, Orson Welles, and you Kingsmen, and Paul Whiteman, and Joe DeRita, and Darlene Garner, and Jeannie Durrell, and all of you who contributed toward this Christmas show. This is Bing Crosby extending Christmas greetings to you all and taking a sprig of holly from the door of your Radio Hall of Fame, leaving Jimmy Wallington to add a few final decorations to Philco's Christmas tree.
This program has come to you as a greeting from Philco distributors and dealers in the United States and Canada. To them, to all the members of the Philco family, and to the millions of Philco owners throughout the world, Philco simply says, in the old, old way, a Merry Christmas and a Happier New Year to you all. Next week, your Radio Hall of Fame will depart a little from its formula and present a full hour version of that great American light opera, Showboat, by Jerome Kern and Oscar Hammerstein II, from Edna Ferber's book. Starring in Philco's production will be the incomparable Charles Winninger as Captain Andy, Alan Jones as Ravenel, Catherine Grayson as Magnolia, and Helen Forrest as Julie. So be sure to listen next week for this American classic. Radio Hall of Fame, produced by Tom McKnight, came to you from the Earl Carroll Theater Restaurant in Hollywood. Stay tuned to this station for Drew Pearson, ace Washington reporter, who follows immediately over most of these stations. This is the Blue Network.
The Radio Hall of Fame, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 24th of December, 1944, on the NBC Blue Network. A day later, on Christmas, Bing Crosby would also co-star in the Elgin Christmas Day Greeting to America, their third annual program. And that does it for this hour of Christmas on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Happy holidays.